Fighting to stave off punitive tariffs announced by President Trump, a senior Mexican delegation was set to begin high-level talks in Washington on Monday, where it'll be pushed to do more to hold back Central American migrants. Trump announced he'd apply tariffs on 5% on all Mexican goods on June 10th and increase the rate in coming months to 25% if Mexico doesn't stem the flow of migrants at the border.
German chipmaker Infineon is buying U.S. rival Cypress Semiconductor for just over $10 billion. The deal brings together two big makers of chips used in cars and other devices. But Infineon is paying a 46% premium over Cypress's share price last month. That has some traders saying that it's overpaying.
Beauty chain Sephora will close all of its U.S. stores for an hour on Wednesday for diversity training, following a racial incident involving Grammy-nominated singer SZA. In April, the black R&B singer tweeted that she was racially profiled at a Sephora store in Calabasas, California.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. This is The Opening Bell on WGN Radio. I'm Bennett Wakenight, stepping in for Steve Grzanich temporarily. He's a little bit behind schedule today, but he will be joining us a little bit shorter later in the program. But in the meantime, we'll kick off your show. Thanks for tuning in with us. It's 5:10 in the morning on Tuesday, the 4th of June. We appreciate you getting up with us and starting your weekday morning with us. And we've got a great show for you today. We've got Doug Roth from Playground Hospitality joining us in the next couple minutes here, along with one of his colleagues, Eric Baroda, food and beverage manager at Wilderness Resorts. That's the Wilderness Resorts in Wisconsin Dells and also in the Tennessee area as well.
Doug, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. How have you been, Stephen?
It is summertime.
Finally.
And we want to have our little conversation today about being outside, being at, let's say, a water park, for instance. And I know you have some information about this, and we have another guest with us, too, that's on the telephone with us. So why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest who's on the phone?
Well, I'd like to introduce Eric. Eric is one of the senior members of management at Wilderness Resort up in the fond, wonderful, beautiful area of the Wisconsin Dells. Eric, good morning.
Well, hi, Doug. Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
Eric Baroda, and it's a Wilderness Resort is the name of the company, right?
That's correct.
Well, we're happy to have you with us this morning. Talk to us a little bit about how business is over the summer months. You're gearing up for a big summer season?
Well, we're just starting to kick it off. We had a nice Memorial Day weekend a week ago, had a few days of rain, but got all of our outdoor water parks open and all the pools filled, and the grills are stocked with burgers and sweet corn, so we are ready to go.
Doug tells us that we mentioned the Wisconsin part of this, Wisconsin Dells part of this, but you actually have properties all over the Midwest, don't you?
Well, we do. We actually have another resort called Wilderness at the Smokies, and named so because it's down in the Smoky Mountains, just north of the Gatlinburg Pigeon Forge area, a little south of Knoxville, and down in the beautiful Tennessee Smoky Mountain area.
Well, Doug, we want to bring Doug back into this part of the conversation. Doug, you want to have a conversation today about how not only business is good at some of these places, but how they operate for the summer and why this is important for the food and beverage discussion.
Well, what I've been most impressed about as I'm working with Wilderness at this point to help do some concept development is the magnitude of the amount of food and beverage that is done in especially up in the Wisconsin Dells, but how Wilderness at this point has so many different concepts on premise. It's sort of like a cruise ship in the sense that there are just so many options, so many opportunities, and I'd love Eric to sort of tell us a little bit about some of the different types of food and beverage that you have, and also some of the incredible numbers, because what I've been impressed with is really the economics of water parks, and that they really are sort of a little bit hidden under the hospitality radar, but are big players when it comes to food and beverage, and also just the world of hospitality alone.
You know, I guess I'll start off the answer by saying we gear to families. I mean, that's our main focus is family, and it's actually our motto. We are family here at the Wilderness. So in saying that, we need to have restaurant food menus that gear to everybody, from mom and dad down to kids alike. So we have several quick service, as we call them, quick service locations just off of our water parks. We have some sit-down family-friendly restaurants on property. And we also have some freestanding restaurants on property that are geared toward maybe mom and dad, but you can also bring the kids alike. We have what's called, we named Fields at the Wilderness, which is our steakhouse on property, and has actually been hailed recently as one of the best steakhouses in Wisconsin. But, you know, in saying this, in saying we have a broad range of food options, we always have to remember that family is what we're gearing them towards, and to be make sure we're catering to kids is probably the most important. So we think about that when we're developing our menus and when we're laying out new development opportunities, that, you know, these menus, and maybe something I didn't necessarily think about early on in my career, have to be focused on the children. I always think it's astounding. I was reading one of our reports the other day that breaks down our food offerings in, for example, our quick service outlets. 35% of all food in our quick service food outlets is chicken tenders. And that's a remarkable stat to me. And I discuss with my restaurant colleagues in the area all the time, and it's quite higher, obviously, than other areas. So, that, you know, that's just an example, a snapshot of how we have to focus. We have to put these families in under the microscope and make sure we're gearing to everybody. But also, you know, dessert options. We have ice cream and frozen yogurt eateries for the kids as well.
I would imagine that's kind of a challenge to keep, not just to have kids happy, but to keep that menu fresh. What besides chicken tenders helps do that?
Well, we're constantly changing our burger offerings. We have a restaurant we call Survivors, which is an island-style sports bar, and so we do a burger of the week up here. We change that frequently, and we change our menu up here once a year, and it's burger focused. You know, we used to have, and recently we've been going away from the entrees on the menus, just because we found that they weren't really selling. They weren't, you know, people didn't want to come out of the water parks in their swimsuits and have mahi mahi on a platter. So we're changing this mahi that we used to have as an entree into, for example, fish tacos. So just keeping up with the trends, keeping new offerings on our menus, and making sure that they're geared towards family is really important.
I was blown away by some of the stats. Doug gave me some of the stats here. You mentioned earlier you were getting the corn ready. The amount of corn on the cob that you go through in a season is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I think I was looking at our numbers, and last year we did just under 4,000 corns a cob during the summer months, and our employees sure like having to peel and shuck all of that in the mornings when we're getting ready, but our guests sure like it, and it's fun to see on the grill and serve out to our customers.
Hey, Eric, I guess one of the questions that I have at this point is that you have, during prime time, which would be right now, how many thousands of people that would be basically on property and then also in the Dells, for instance, at this time of year? I know the population shrinks dramatically during the winter, but what do you look like when you're almost at capacity, if that's a number you can share?
Well, we have over 1,100 sleeping options now on property, which is, you know, just, and I'll continue on to answer your question in just a moment, but I think it's interesting to look back at what we started with just in 1995, which was under 80. We had 79 units when we first opened up, so to get to 1,100 is pretty fascinating to watch over the last 20, 25 years. But to answer your question, Doug, we'll have over 6,000 people here on a peak occupancy day on property, and so to have them in all of our water parks, we actually have 4 indoor water parks and 4 outdoor water parks to make sure we have enough room for everybody, and because that's a lot of people. As to the number in the Dells, I guess I can't speak to that, but you know, for a it's always remarkable. The Dells is a population of just over a couple thousand people, but to have hundreds of thousand people come in here during the summer months is fun to see.
You mentioned earlier the fields at the Wilderness Restaurant and its ranking. Does that have anything to do with the lamb lollipops?
Well, I think that's a big part of it. Yeah, our happy hour, and you bring up the lamb lollipops, which is on our happy hour appetizer menu. It's something that we just started kind of promoting and bringing about a year ago or a year and a half ago. And we've always had them, but we're just starting to push it. But the lamb lollipops, the black and blue ahi tuna, the crab cakes, we have a lobster bisque on that as well that I think could be a meal in and of itself. And then the happy hour cocktails that come along with it. It's just a fun little aspect that people might not know about at Fields that we offer.
Well, sort of broadening, again, the horizon a little bit, Eric, from the standpoint of economics of a water park. Obviously, the food and beverage part of it is critical. Probably rooms are as critical. But my sense is that the water parks themselves are the real drivers when you look at the business model.
Well, they are, and that's why people come here. I mean, we have world-class water parks, world-class amenities. Like I said earlier, we have four indoor and four outdoor water parks, all with different rides and different amenities within them. Some have lazy rivers. Some have a giant wave pool. We have the thrill slides, we call them, Haley's Comet Racers, where you lay on your stomach on a mat and race your buddy down the slide. So they are really what people come here. But, you know, our focus has been it's just beyond having the best rides and slides these days. It's about the total experience. And, you know, your resort has to be a destination all around. Your resort, your restaurants have to be unique and have to have a different experience at every location. And, you know, equally as important as our water parks nowadays are our dry attractions. I'd say within the last 5 to 7 years, we've really put a focus on our dry attractions department, thanks to our attractions director, Chris, and some of our leaders here at the resort. You know, now we have a canyon zip line. We have a ropes course for kids. We have a laser tag arena. We have huge arcades. We have a rock climbing wall. We have indoor and outdoor go-karts. So, you know, it's really just beyond that. The water parks are still our main attraction, but we have a lot of side pieces that are attractive for people as well.
Eric, let's talk a little bit about the beverage part of this. Give us a sense of what I know you have swim-up bars. There's I'm sure, some soft drink areas as well. Milkshakes, probably pretty popular. Talk to us about the beverage part of the food and beverage industry at your places.
Yeah, well, mom and dad need to relax too, right? we that obviously has to be a big focus for us. You know, a while back we understood that mom and dad wanted to come and have a margarita by the pool while little Johnny was in there having a good time. And so we've reacted to that over the years. And you brought up our swim up bar, which we built in 2015. It's an octagon shaped swim up bar, and half of it you can enjoy your cocktails while sitting in the pool. And it's been remarkably popular. I was looking at some stats the other day, and it's kind of along the same line as the chicken tender number. It always strikes me at how much of these things we sell. But just to give you an example, we were just under 70,000 margaritas sold in 2018. And so that tells you mom's having a good time when she's coming up here.
All right, Eric, we appreciate you being on with us this morning, and all the best to you for a good season this year.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Steve. I appreciate you having me.
Eric Baroda with us today from Wilderness Resorts, and Doug Roth from Playground Hospitality. Thank you, as always.
Thanks so much, Steve. Appreciate it.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. The Illinois General Assembly has approved legalized sports betting, a gambling expansion, and funding for nearly $45 billion in capital construction. It's the gambling part of that that we're going to focus on in this segment this morning. Joining us is Jason Grotto, a reporter at ProPublica, who's been looking into the efforts not only to expand gambling statewide, but here in Chicago, and has done some significant reporting on it this year. Jason, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
I guess the big question is, as we look at what has happened here, will residents, based on your reporting and what you have discovered and have been reporting on, benefit from this? Is this going to be a good thing for Illinois, or is it too early to tell?
I think it's much too early to tell. You know, if history is any guide, I think that the revenue projections that have been put out there are probably inflated. We worked on a series of stories beginning early this year in January, looking at the Video Gaming Act, which is a very similar move by the legislature, you know, a massive gambling expansion bill put out there at the last minute with very little research done behind it about the impact. The legislature said at the time, and this was back in 2009, that video gambling would bring $300 million a year in right away. And of course, they started borrowing. States started borrowing right after the law passed, but it actually took a decade for the revenue to come through, and that hurt the state in the long run. And so I think, you know, with this expansion right now, there's a lot of questions about saturation of gambling positions and other issues that really haven't shaken out yet.
Yeah, and I know that the story focused on the taxes that are associated with some of this gambling, video gambling specifically. What did the Illinois General Assembly finally decide with that? Or were they going to hike taxes not only on other gambling, but the video gambling as well?
Yeah, so for video gambling, which, you know, prior to the law that passed on Sunday, well, it passed the legislature on Sunday, waiting for the governor's signature. Prior to that, you know, Illinois had some of the lowest tax rates in the country, we found, on video gambling terminals. Under the new legislation, the tax will go from 30% of the revenue to 33% in the first year, then 34%. That'll put us about in the middle of the pack. There are a number of states that have tax rates at 50 or above for video gambling machines. There were some tax breaks in the legislation for casinos, in large part because, you know, they're going to be opening six more casinos, excuse me, gambling at horse tracks. And so the competition is going to get very, very tight. So there were some tax lowering of taxes at the casino level for table games, I believe.
Yeah, and Jason, one of the more concerning parts of your reporting on this has been the ties to the gaming industry, specifically the video gambling industry, again, by lawmakers who decided some of this. Obviously, this is Illinois, and we're probably used to this, but there were a couple of key lawmakers who have their hand really deeply into this.
Yeah, that's right. The Senate Minority Leader, Bill Brady, a Republican from Bloomington, we found, we received some records that showed that he was a person of significant influence and control with a company called Midwest Electronic Gaming. This is a video gambling operator that operates in central Illinois. And so basically what that means is that the senator was actually receiving revenue directly from the machine. So he signed contracts with locations. These are the bars and restaurants where the machines go into, and then would get a percentage of those, of the revenues from those machines. There was no disclosure about what kind of percentage, how many contracts, so that we're not able to see. But that was one of the issues. Now, the senator, when the legislation, the current legislation, came up for debate in the Senate and for a vote, he did recuse himself and disclosed his conflict. This was after our stories came out, but he did not vote on the issue. Also, we found that Democratic Senator Tom Cullerton, a distant cousin of the Senate President John Cullerton, he's from Villa Park. He was also a sales agent. Again, this is someone who would go around to bars and restaurants and sign them up for video gambling. And then we found that the son of the assistant minority leader, Antonio Munoz, he's a Democrat from Chicago, also was making money off video gambling. I should, you know, Brady and Cullerton recused themselves. Munoz did not. He actually presided over the vote and voted himself for the gambling expansion.
Yeah, and what are the ethical rules on that and the law? I mean, is it perfectly legal for these lawmakers to be involved as they are like this? And what does it say about perhaps future ethics rules that might cover some of this?
Well, I think what it shows is the ethics rules are pretty weak here in the state. In fact, the former inspector general for the state wrote a scathing editorial when she left, pointing out some of the issues. And one of them is just there was no way to know from the disclosures that are currently out there that these lawmakers were potentially benefiting them or their families from these operations. And so, you know, as we expand gambling in the state, I think this is something that's going to become more of an issue. You know, they'll be opening a casino in Chicago, which will be a 4,000 position, which is where, you know, basically the number of seats in a casino where you can bet. There's just going to be a lot of money sloshing around. And, you know, we do have a long history in our state of being ethically challenged. And so I think, you know, one of the key issues will be transparency. And unfortunately, you know, in this 816-page bill that passed on Sunday, there's a paragraph in there that actually makes the gaming board less transparent. And that's because they received special exemptions under the Open Meetings Act. And, you know, that's significant because the board has already been dinged twice by judges and lawsuits for violating the Open Meetings Act. So I think this is going to be an ongoing issue with the expansion of gambling in the state.
And so based on what you know and based on your reporting here, what would be the suggestion if some lawmakers were out there listening to this or reading your reporting, what kinds of legislation would be necessary to keep all of this in check and improve the transparency?
Well, I think, you know, you could look at states that have significant amounts of gambling and how they handle the regulatory side of things. Nevada would be one place to look. I mean, their gaming board hearings or their gaming commission hearings, you know, go on for hours. There's a ton of transparency. They put a lot of information out to the public that, you know, the public that may want to, you know, look over what they're doing. You know, one of the issues here in Illinois is that for years the Illinois Gaming Board has been desperately underfunded. When the Video Gaming Act passed, what we found was that the legislature provided no additional funding to the Gaming Board, and it struggled mightily to regulate the sprawling industry. You know, one of the upsides of the new legislation is that they do increase the budget for the Gaming Board and provide an additional $20 million, it looks like, to implement all of this gambling that's going on. They'll be doing sports gambling. They'll be overseeing parts of the racetracks now, more casinos, additional video gambling. And so, you know, is it going to be enough money for them to do the kind of regulatory work that needs to be done and to provide the transparency to the public that is going to be necessary? I mean, that's a question that's difficult to see right now.
Well, and it certainly sounds like you're going to have plenty more avenues for further and future reporting on all of this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is going to be a very big industry. And unfortunately, you know, the ranks of, you know, my ilk journalists have been dwindling over time. And so this is going to be a really heavy lift for those of us who are left and just a lot to watch over the next few years.
Well, Jason, we appreciate you being with us this morning and thank you for sharing your reporting.
Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Have a great day. Jason Grotto is a reporter at ProPublica. You can read more online at ProPublica.org. We're going to also link out to some of Jason's work in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later this morning at WGNRadio.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, looks like a nice bump in the positive direction this morning expected on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 111 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures up nearly 0.5% as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. For the second week in a row, the weekly crop bulletins came in lower than expectations of traders and analysts. Looking at the corn crop, first of all, the planted acreage percentage as of Sunday night coming in at 67%. The trade was expecting 71%, and the five-year average for the country is 96%. Checking the three I states, Illinois, 45% planted, five-year average, 98%. Indiana, only 31% of the corn acres planted, five-year average, 94%. Iowa, 80% planted, and the five-year average, 99%. Soybean figures there, the total planted acreage as of Sunday night, 39% compared to a five-year average of 79% and trade expectations of 42%. As we take a look at market activity yesterday, wheat making the biggest gain because of wet weather that could slow harvest of the winter wheat crop. So wheat showed a pretty good size gain, up 17 and a quarter cents, while corn traded lower, soybeans traded mixed. And we have African swine fever going on, but now add another one. Brazilian exporters selling beef to China face a temporary ban on shipments as Brazil deals with an atypical case of mad cow disease in the Mato Grosso state. Beef exporters were formally told by the government that as of yesterday morning, they would no longer allow shipment of beef to China. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday, June 4th, on the calendar today, we'll start to see motor vehicle sales numbers coming in for the previous month. Also today, a report on factory orders. We'll get a look at the Red Book as well. On the earnings calendar, Tiffany & Company, Land's End, Salesforce, and GameStop. Navistar out with earnings this morning. Navistar International beating on profit and revenue expectations by wide margins, also lifting the outlook. Navistar earnings per share of 48 cents. This morning, Navistar shares are down just slightly in the pre-market trade, 31.10 a share.